I'd like to remind all participants this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you, Kelly. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the IGO-INGO Working Group call on Wednesday, 7th of August, 2013. On the call today, we have Jim Bykoff, Elizabeth Finberg, Chuck Gomes, Alan Greenberg, Catherine Gribben, Burley Lilyev Acosta, David Maher, Jude Lauter, Christopher Rossi, Thomas Rickert, and Mason Cole. We also have Megan Rogers. I do not have your affiliation. Sorry, Megan. Could you give it to me, please?
Yes, of course. I'm from the OECD.
Thank you very much. We have no apologies so far. And from staff, we have Barry Cobb, Mary Wong, and myself, Julia Chavelin. May I please remind all participants to please state their names before speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you very much. And over to you, Thomas.
Thank you very much, Julia. This is Thomas Rickert. I'm chairing this working group, and I'd like to welcome all of you for this on this call. I have to apologize in advance for poor audio quality. I'm actually doing this call from a taxi, so should I be disconnected? Group is making our way to Dresden Airport, and Avery Doria, who's been speaking at the same conference as I did, asked me to convey her apologies to this group, so please take note of that. As has been mentioned by Barry when he sent out the invitation and agenda to the mailing list, we're trying to limit the duration of this call to 1 hour. I think it's feasible for us to go through at least the majority of the agenda items in this hour, and I will elaborate a little bit more on our plans as we go on once we get there. So before we move to the second agenda item, as usual, I'd like to ask whether there are any updates to statements of interest. Hearing none. Unfortunately, I'm not on the Adobe, so I can't see whether any statements have been made in the chat. If this were the case, staff, please do let me know. But I guess there are no updates to statements of interest, which allows us to move to the second agenda item, which is the review of public comment on the initial report. The public comment period is going to close the end of this day, but Barry was kind enough to enter the public comments received so far to the tool that you have received by email. And I would like to hand over to Barry to give us a quick overlook of what happened there.
Great. Thank you, Thomas. This is Barry with ICANN staff. So for those that are in the AC room, you'll basically see what was the document sent out to the list yesterday that contains a compilation of all the comments received or submitted through the public comment period. Essentially, the document is divided up amongst general comments, and then it is sectioned out between top-level protection types of comments, second-level protection comments, eligibility criteria, scope of identifiers, and a few other categories as well. Essentially, what I did was read through each comment and extracted the meat of or the essence of a particular comment based on the topic that it related to, and entered it into the Word document, and it also has its corresponding, the person that submitted the comment, as well as their affiliation. And take note that some of the names that you may see on there are perhaps chairs of stakeholder groups or constituencies or advisory committees where they formally submit their comments. And so some of those names may not be familiar with you, but it does have their associated affiliation. I think for the most part, one thing to note, Claudia did submit comments today that are not included in the version that I sent out to the list yesterday, and I'll be sure to get those incorporated into the tool now. So essentially we have about 20 pages of comments. And a typical fashion for a working group, the veterans of working groups are very familiar with this process. For those that aren't, essentially what our task would be is to review each comment within the working group and determine if the comments provided any additional areas that the working group should consider for the report and or possible recommendation. And those areas where there is a comment listed that offers something new that hadn't been previously discussed, we'll also document if there was any kind of recommended action to take based on that comment, whether it be perform more research or update a particular recommendation or change the initial report based on the agreement with the working group. I think everybody on the call is familiar with who submitted comments, and what you'll notice is that essentially all stakeholder groups that are involved in this working group were the only ones to submit comments. So I think as you read through this tool, you'll find that pretty much the noted positions about particular protections at the top or second level are fairly well known. And given that this was an initial report, the working group does have some flexibility about how to proceed with review of these public comments. Typically, in a public comment forum, we're looking for feedback external to the working group, although working group members are allowed to submit comments. Very much like our sessions in Durban, we were hopefully seeking additional input from other community members about any of the proposed recommendations, options, et cetera. And again, what you'll find is that the comments that were submitted are pretty much restatements of positions that have already been discussed in the working group. So in the interest of time, the working group may want to consider, instead of reviewing through each of these, we could possibly put out a blanket statement that we agree with the comments that were received thus far. The working group has noted the various positions, and in short, basically try to expedite the review of these public comments, given the fact that we're on a particular time schedule. But that's up for the working group to decide. If you do feel it's important to review through each one of these, we certainly can. And the other supporting aspect behind that is, within our initial report, we didn't really have any concrete recommendations. Thus, at some point when we do release the final report, we will have to go out for another public comment to receive community input on that. Chuck, I see your hand is raised.
Thanks, Barry. Did I understand you correctly to suggest that we say we agree with these comments?
My bad. I should have used the word we acknowledge the comments,
okay.
Not necessarily agree. I think most of the working group members are very well informed about the stated positions on the various topics that we're reviewing. And in the sake of time, I'm not sure we're going to gain anything of new insight based on the review of the comments. But again, this is totally up to the working group. Chuck.
Yes, thanks, Barry. That makes more sense. I didn't think you meant to say agree, because obviously we have some varying points of view on that. But I ask a question of Alan regarding the ALAC comments? When I read the comments myself before seeing this summary, I had this question as well. Does the ALAC not take a position on IGOs? They talk about the IOC and the Red Cross and INGOs, but I didn't see anything in their comments with regard to IGOs.
I'd have to go look. I don't think we have deliberately not taken a position. My recollection is that we said, I don't remember the exact wording, but I think we said we could live with protection of names. We don't agree with protection of acronyms in the general case, although we could imagine specific ones where protection is warranted. I think we even used UNICEF as an example. So I think we did talk about it. I'd have to go back to the document.
Yeah, I'd appreciate, this is Chuck, I'd appreciate that if you would, because I think I did this last week, so I don't remember specifically, but I don't think I saw anything about IGOs in general.
Well, I think we answered all the questions. Maybe you didn't. We didn't ask one about IGOs, but I'll go back and look.
Okay, thanks.
And for purposes of the transcript, that was Alan Greenberg that was chatting.
Yes, indeed. This is Alan Greenberg speaking for the sound record.
Thank you, Alan. Okay, great. Any other questions about the comment review tool? You know, I think for the most part, Thomas will close off this agenda item, and if need be, we can make the decision about how we wish to proceed with the review of the comments on the list. But for the most part, there it is, and we can move on from there. Thomas, any last thoughts?
Yes. First of all, thank you, Barry, presenting to the group. I want to say that I very much thank the working group members for putting in public comments, because I think that this doesn't go unnoticed, and I think that the broader community will see that this communication is going on much more than they would find out when we're internally discussing in the working group, although these meetings are certainly also public. So thanks for taking the time and making the effort to put in public comments. Actually, in my preparations with staff for this call, we've made the decision to propose to proceed as Barry described in the interest of time. And I should add that certainly we will make sure that all comments that are received before the deadline will be incorporated into the tool and also analyzed to see whether there are any significant alterations to what we currently have on the table. I would specifically like to highlight the request by the RCRC for additional designations, which was a new aspect that we discussed, and should further aspects emerge that need dedicated consultation with the working group, we will certainly highlight that. I would very much welcome views from the working group, whether or not you agree with this approach. Unfortunately, I can't see whether there are any hands in the Adobe, so Barry, if you could assist me with that, that would be helpful.
For the moment, no hands.
Okay, so I take that as agreement with our proposal, which allows us to proceed. Sorry?
Chuck has raised his hand.
Chuck, please.
And Chuck, you may be on mute.
Sorry about that. I was on mute. This is Chuck. Thomas, I wanted to be clear. You were asking us whether we're supportive of the approach regarding the public comments or the additional recommendations for protection for the Red Cross.
I highlighted the Red Cross as one aspect that required consultation with the working group to show that we have carefully gone through the public comments to see which of those were confirmations of positions that had previously stated. So I did not request the working group to agree with that specific request or recommendation. My question to the working group was whether the working group agrees to not going through the document that Barry has provided line by line, but that we would acknowledge the public comments received.
This is Chuck. Thanks for clarifying that. I'm fine with that.
Thank you very much, which allows us to move to the next agenda item. And I will again hand over to Barry, who will fill us in on some thoughts that he has exchanged with others inside ICANN on the trademark clearinghouse. Or, you know, you will remember that we discussed using the TMCH as the basis or as an analogous model for protection mechanisms, and this approach has received quite a bit of traction. And Barry, over to you.
Great. Thank you, Thomas. So this is Barry. Certainly, there was much discussion about this topic in our last call, and obviously it was also included very much – within our initial report that several of the second-level proposed recommendation options teed off of a clearinghouse type of model. And given the, as just Thomas described, the traction that this is formulating, we thought it would be a good idea to engage with some of the experts around the trademark clearinghouse and see if this was and true indeed a viable option for the working group to consider. So last week we met with Karen Lentz and a few others. We briefed them on, at a high level, what some of the recommendation options would look like. For instance, entering into the clearinghouse itself, sunrise aspects, claims notice aspects, et cetera. I won't go into too many details. That we didn't really get into many details as well, but in general, the conversation was positive that if the working group did make a recommendation to leverage the trademark clearinghouse for any second-level protections of the four types of organizations that we're dealing with here in this working group, that it was a viable option. Certainly, they couldn't speak too much to any implementation details, given the fact that we don't have true concrete recommendations yet. But for the most part, it was considered viable. A couple of items that Karen mentioned to us that maybe we should consider is in terms of the standard to verify the organizations that would be entered. And it's directly kind of tied to who would bear the cost of entering in with a into a trademark clearinghouse. And I think for the most part, it's the distinguishment of which organizations would be allowed to enter into the clearinghouse and how they would be entered. So if, for instance, there was a collective group of organizations that was on a finite list, those could potentially be entered in batch versus the organization seeking protection entering into the clearinghouse themselves. And both have their pros and cons, but for the most part, I think if the working group were to sway more towards the organization seeking protection of wanting to enter the clearinghouse, that may impact the cost model, so to speak. The second element that we touched on was the area of sunrise, and given the idea that the organizations seeking protection are listed within the trademark clearinghouse, is would they have access to sunrise or could it be omitted depending on the type of recommendation that was formed out of here? And, you know, I think presently we're still debating whether these organizations should have access to sunrise or not. From Karen's perspective, that didn't seem to be an issue. It would just be more about the recommendation or possible recommendation that would be formed by the working group. Lastly, we touched on the claims notice aspect as well, and kind of in two parts. The first was the notification itself, and I, for those that I myself had not seen a draft of what the claims notice would look like, there was some RPM documents released by ICANN last night, and within those documents, it does have a draft version of what that claims notice would be constituted with. And there was discussion last week as to whether there would need to be a modification to that notice to accommodate the type of organizations that we're considering here. In an ideal world, a single notice would be best. However, I think given the nuances between true trademark rights versus rights from a different legal perspective, it would most likely require two separate types of notices. And depending on how that was implemented, that could have an impact in terms of implementation into the clearinghouse itself. And the other thing that I'll let you know about is in terms of the wording of the notice itself, we have taken a draft and we're kind of starting to review through it about what areas might be changed. And For those that haven't seen what the notice looks like, I'll be sure to send a copy of that out to the list so you can kind of get an idea, and hopefully this will help formulate some discussion around this. Also, I think I will turn it over to Mary just for a couple of minutes. She has some information about some of the legal rights issues in regards to Sunrise. And so, Mary, would you like to contribute, please?
Sure. Thanks, Barry. And just real quick to pick up on Barry's summary on the Sunrise requirement, part of our discussion with Karen and Legal and the others was a concern that was raised. And again, as Barry says, we want to emphasize that this is not something that we're saying is or is not a recommendation from this working group. So we're just bringing this back as feedback from the operational and legal side of ICANN, that we need to be, as a working group, careful with crafting or recommending any kind of Sunrise protection, because that could be viewed as giving specific or particular or extra rights or legal protections at the very least that may not exist under certain laws or international principles for certain organizations. So that was a concern that was discussed during the call, and we felt that we should highlight it back to the working group as you guys continue your deliberations. That's it, Barry.
Great. Thank you, Mary. So I think to close off this agenda item, again, this is a viable possibility for the working group to consider, and hopefully this will help formulate positions as we move forward. Are there any questions with regard to this topic before we move on? Alan.
Not a question, just an observation on Mary's last comment. There are some people in this group who claim that much of what we're potentially recommending, and in fact what much of what the board and the GAC have either approved or recommended, is providing rights that do not exist currently under law. So this is just yet another one, perhaps. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Greg, I see your hand raised.
Yeah, and also kind of an observation or a response. I think that in terms of Sunrises, and I think that there would be perhaps fewer concerns, or maybe less elevated concerns, if what might be recommended is a so-called Sunrise B approach coming after the trademark Sunrise. I think that we still have to get back to the kind of fundamental questions of what law may require, or what a self-regulatory body like ICANN needs to look at in terms of what the law could require. But there are nuances, I think, in how a Sunrise is implemented that our recommendations could reflect if we go down that road at all. Thanks.
Barry, this is Mary. Can I follow up on Greg's comment?
Please.
And, Greg, I think that's exactly right. So, as Barry said, our discussion at this point with operations has been at a fairly high level. So, like I said, we don't want this to preclude or prohibit any kind of discussion the working group might have on that. And it may well be that some of the more nuanced or different aspects and types of Sunrise could be more appropriate than others, but we would leave this to the working group.
Great. Thank you, Mary. Any additional comments with respect to the Trademark Clearinghouse or Sunrise or claims? All right, great. So, Thomas, we'll kind of hand it back to you, or I can continue to move forward on the agenda, which is the fourth item to discuss topics for eventual consensus call.
Thank you very much, Barry. I guess that one aspect might be worthwhile briefly discussing, though, and that is the issue or the recommendation by ICANN staff to that it would be much easier for them to implement a list that they receive rather than dealing with individual requests for entry in the TMCH. I guess that's worthwhile noting. Certainly, we should not be remote controlled by what ICANN staff is suggesting. Nonetheless, I would like to give the opportunity to comment on that or otherwise respond, because I guess that this corresponds to one of the recommendations or the proposals that have been made earlier, which is to take a list produced by the GAC on an as-is basis. So obviously that approach would also facilitate implementation. So unless there are more questions or comments by the working group members, we can in fact move to the fourth agenda item, and that is discussing potential common ground in preparation of a consensus call that needs to be made rather sooner than later. And Barry will briefly make a proposal or outline a proposal that we're going to make to you, and over to you, Barry.
All right. Thank you, Thomas. So under agenda item 4A, it lists a kind of a general framework of protections. The wording there is probably not the best use in terms of what we're trying to accomplish. And unfortunately, we don't have the model yet to share with the working group, but I assure you this will be our main agenda item for next week. And essentially, what we've done is incorporated the recommendation options that we had in our initial report into a tool, and this tool will outline the possible recommendation options that we have, and I think that this may appease most in this working group is that it is distinguished in a column format by the four organizations. So column one, for instance, would be Red Cross, Red Crescent. Column two would be the IOC. Column three is the IGOs. Column four is the INGOs. And then there's an additional column that will also consider the different types of recommendation options and how that might look or affect in the new, the existing GPLBs. Certainly, that is a topic that the working group hasn't touched much upon yet, but we're aware that that is on the horizon, and we thought that that would be a good tool as well to try to document any possible recommendations that the working group would come up with in that regard. But in essence, the cells for each type of recommendation option are will briefly depict as to about where the working group stands on that particular recommendation option. It's more or less a view from the chair as to where the working group stands and where it possibly can gain the most support. We'll review through this tool, as I said, next week, and begin the dialogue as to whether the tool represents an accurate reflection on where the working group stands. And hopefully it will be useful for us to get to closer to a consensus call about a package second of recommendations, if any. And from there, then we can extract the results out of this tool to formulate our written recommendations that would eventually go into our final report. Again, unfortunately, I don't have anything to share with you yet. We do anticipate to send this out before close of this week to allow working group members time to review through it, and we'll get into more of the details of it at next week's call. Chuck, yes, please.
Thanks, Barry, and this sounds like a useful tool to at least get us started on this. But I'm still confused. I've raised this before. I don't understand, with regard to any policy recommendations we might make, why we have to single out existing TLDs. If consensus policy is recommended, it will apply to all TLDs, unless it's specifically accepted in the policy recommendations. So now I do understand, we've talked about this in our group, that there may be some implementation issues. But I don't think we're at that point of talking about implementation issues with regard to new existing GTLDs, are we?
Thank you, Chuck. This is Barry. No, you're perfectly right in your statement. again, I probably misspoke or spoke confusingly. The reason why I included the column in there is as for an example, if when we deliberate in the second level protection, if certain names were to be included on the reserve name list within the registry agreement, and that was a recommendation that the working group approved, you are correct, that is a consensus policy aspect of it. And the reason why I included the column in there is as a placeholder for us to document any nuances about how that particular recommendation may be implemented so that we can include that in the final report for staff and others to implement down the road. But you are very correct. I don't think that there will. I couldn't foresee any particular specific nuanced recommendation that applies to existing GTLDs or not. Again, it was more of a placeholder, so that we make sure that we at least discuss it to its full extent from a policy perspective. I hope that helped clarify.
This is Chuck again. If I can follow up, I fully appreciate that, and that's good. That needs to be documented. But I was looking at this tool, and maybe I'm misreading it, as a tool to help us get a consensus call. And so I don't see how existing TLDs come into the consensus call. At some point, we may have to deal with some implementation issues where we want to do a consensus call, but I don't think we're there yet.
Agreed. Is somebody trying to speak?
Yes, it's Thomas. I just wanted to remind everybody in the group that we have actually been chartered to deal with new and existing TLDs, if memory doesn't completely fail me. So I guess it makes perfect sense for the group at least to discuss at a high level how to deal with grandfathering and other questions that would also affect existing namespaces. But that shouldn't take away the support for the general statement that Chuck made and that Barry, you confirmed. Back over to you. Maybe we go to Alan, who is next in the queue. I can now see you.
Well, it's actually Greg, then Alan. Greg, please go ahead.
Thanks, Greg Shatton. I just think in terms of timing that we should deal with the issue, even if it is, you know, in a sense, implementation about how to deal with grandfathering in the existing GTLDs and not kind of put it towards some future point in time. There aren't a lot of future points in time, hopefully, that we're going to be dealing with this. I think that kind of stripping that out and putting it to the side doesn't make sense to me. You know, clearly it's to an extent a nuance, but there are an awful lot of, there are 22, 23 existing GTLDs we have to deal with, and we might as well deal with that issue along with everything else in coming to consensus in a final report. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Greg. Alan?
Thank you. Alan Greenberg speaking. Just to make life more interesting, I'll state the exact opposite. The nuance of how any recommendation, should we make a recommendation to protect, is implemented in new GTLDs may range from, take back any TL and any domains that are currently registered and apply the rule uniformly to, there's a 10-year period over which it's going to be phased into who knows what. I think there's going to be a lot of options there, but it will depend heavily on what the protections are that we're granting on the new TLDs. I think the problem we have addressing that is sufficiently complex that we should not mess up the situation by looking at the transition for old TLDs at the same time. Yes, we know there's a finite set of responsibilities, and we'll tackle those when we know what the protections are. I think it's a waste of time to talk in the general case of how do we implement something when we don't know exactly what the protections are. I think we should lock them in, get rid of other distractions, and if and when we have a recommendation for new TLDs, go back and look at how we grandfather or not. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Alan. And this is Barry. Just to kind of put some fears at rest, hopefully, without a doubt, as Alan stated, the primary purpose of this tool is for the new GTLDs and the possible recommendations to move us forward. When you, I hate to keep referencing to something you can't see, but when you do see it, you'll see it as the existing Gs as just a standalone column. And I do agree with what Alan said. We wouldn't want to necessarily even really tackle that particular column until we've gotten a lot further down the road for a consensus call of what possible recommendations the working group would consider for protections today. Chuck, please.
Yeah, thanks. This is Chuck. And I just don't think we're ready for a consensus call on implementation for existing TLDs yet. We haven't even discussed it. So that, I guess where I'm having trouble is this is all under the topic of consensus call. Are we talking about a consensus call 3 months from now, or is this a one in the near term?
This is Barry. I think for the sake of concern, forget I mentioned the existing GTLD column. It's certainly the bigger entree to eat on the plate right now is protections for new GTLDs, and that's where the focus will be. And I'll make sure that column is not necessarily a part of our review in terms of getting us closer to a consensus call. In terms of a time frame on which the consensus call is, I don't think we have a specific date, but hopefully in the near term, given the time crunch that we're about to face. And Greg.
Thank you. It's Greg Schatt. And just briefly, I wasn't, to clarify my earlier remarks, I wasn't suggesting putting the cart before the horse and somehow having a discussion of implementation and existing GTLDs before we knew what was being implemented as a policy matter. That would not work. I agree with that, but that wasn't what I was suggesting. What I was suggesting is that we put the cart directly behind the horse and deal with it as you know, things as we progress through the kind of consensus issues, and not leave the cart by the side of the road for some extra number of months after we, you know, resolve how things will run for the new GTLDs. If we find in some way that we're running out of time or energy, then maybe we, you know, leave the cart of existing GTLDs by the side of the road and deal just with the new GTLDs that are at the back of the horse. I think in terms of consensus calls, I would certainly suggest and strongly recommend that we try to expedite as much as possible, remembering that I think at some point we were considered to be an expedited PDP, at least, and you know, given the swirl of issues with the GAC advice and whatever ICANN board may do with issues that, you know, overlap greatly with ours, that, you know, we should, I think that our final, you know, our consensus and recommendations should appear while they're in the mix, as opposed to some months afterward, if at all possible, and certainly before, you know, if we can, before there is actually, you know, the beginnings of sunrises, if at all possible. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Greg. And Alan, you have your hand raised?
Yeah. Thank you, Alan Greenberg. I think at this point we're all violently agreeing with each other that we can't do a consensus call on implementation with the old TLDs, which we haven't discussed, and we don't know what it is we're deciding to implement until we finalize the consensus call and get the results on the first part. So I think we're all violently agreeing with each other on this one. I'll just add an observation that for some people on this call, the concept may resonate of discussing this this whole problem in relation to the back of the horse, but I won't go any further than that.
It was not an accident. Right. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Alan. And I'm actually through security now, so I'm back and available to talk. Maybe we should, actually put this question to rest for the moment. I would still like to give working group members the opportunity to talk about exception procedures and the way they envisage them, or to ask the question in a different way, whether there have been any changes to what original thinking was, which we should take into account. You know, I have to hope that maybe the Ellen, please.
It's Alan Greenberg speaking. My only comment is a number of us, and ALAC certainly is among them and not the only one, have made statements about if there are exception procedures to allow use of the semi-blocked domains or whatever, however we classify it, that it must meet several criteria. And I worry a little bit that no one has been able to dream up a procedure which actually meets those criteria. So I think anything we think about as exceptions has to be in the context of, are we going to end up with something which is implementable and meets the needs of the varying parties? I'm a little bit dubious about that. Thank you.
And Thomas, you may be on mute. You may have dropped. Greg, please go ahead.
Sure. I guess I have not studied the comments to the extent to see if there's been any, you know, good concrete suggestions about exception procedures. It seems to me that, you know, probably any type of exception procedure would need to involve some sort of a third-party review, an independent panelist of some sort, as opposed to something that's just worked out between the parties, or where the party kind of holding the preemptive right gets to decide where to go. I think we've discussed that type of exception procedure for years now, and it hasn't gotten traction across a good part of the community. So, you know, I think you know, some sort of a third-party objective, transparent standard would be where I would go. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Greg.
Thanks.
Chuck, please go ahead.
Thanks. It's Chuck speaking. I just want to come back to Alan and remind him that I did suggest a very simple exception procedure. Now, I understand that it's not complete. There are some details that have to be added, but very simple exception procedure could be that if there's a name that is in the trademark clearinghouse that matches one of the protected names, that name could be an exception could be allowed under certain conditions, which could, I think, readily be defined, that there be no confusion, et cetera, like that. So my question to Alan is, does that meet the criteria of the ALAC?
Alan, your hand is raised.
Alan, I can try to answer. I don't think so, because there, if you look at existing uses of IGO character strings, and I understand we haven't yet addressed whether we're going to handle acronyms or not, but if you look at existing uses, a lot of them are valid uses, but not ones that where trademarks are held, not ones where the rules necessarily allow inclusion in the trademark clearinghouse, or even, you know, make that reasonable. So, no, I think that that's not going to be sufficient. Again, I'm giving you a personal opinion. This isn't something the ALAC has formally discussed. I understand it's clean and neat, but I don't think it is wide enough to address the real needs in the community of people who are using things which may overlap. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan.
Okay, hey, this is Chuck again. I understand it may not cover all cases, Alan, but is there a problem with using that to cover some cases?
Alan speaking, I'm not ruling this out, and you know, certainly my personal position is not necessarily going to hold sway over everything. I just see that as being problematic. But, you know, is it a good start? Is it a start at a discussion? Sure.
Why is it problematic? This is Chuck.
Just because I believe it's not sufficient.
Oh, so not sufficient. Okay. Thank you.
I have a question for Chuck, actually. With your idea of using designations that are in the Trademark Clearinghouse, I guess that at least if you look at the IGOs, they would be protected against commercial third-party use. And I'm not sure whether non-commercial users would necessarily have trademarks or other rights that could be entered into the TMCH.
Well, this is Chuck. These organizations would have the protections, assuming that some policy was established that they would have their protections. I'm only talking about using the Trademark Clearinghouse for the exceptions. The classic example that we've all used many times and the ALAC uses is the Olympic, the name Olympic. Okay? If Olympic Paint has a trademark for Olympic, they would be eligible for an exception under whatever conditions were applied to that. So I'm not understanding your question, I don't think, Thomas.
Well, I guess, let's take the Olympic Paint as a starting point. Certainly, if they have a trademark, that could be a good starting point to give them an exception and allow them to use a domain name, including the string Olympic, or even being consisting of the word Olympic. But if there, let's say, were a non-commercial organization that didn't have a trademark, that would not be able to obtain an exemption for a name that is also used by an IGO.
This is Chuck. I get that, but let me tell you where I'm coming from. Basically, the registry stakeholder group has wanted this whole process to be as objective and straightforward and inexpensive as possible. And as soon as you start adding in new third-party evaluations and the more subjective it gets, the more it gets away from that. So, you know, I think we're very supportive, not just me, we as registries are very supportive of straightforward, objective criteria for exceptions and trying to avoid the situation where you have this expensive process for exceptions. So that's the background that you've heard before.
Okay, thank you. Are there any more comments? Okay, well, I guess at least as I'm concerned, that is food for thought, and I will analyze this and the previous calls that we had on that specific subject matter, which I guess would allow us to confirm the next meeting, which is the last agenda item for the 14th of August. I'm sure that we will need the whole 2 hours to go through all the various options for all the organizations or categories of organizations requesting protections in you know, all the facets of it, to see what the potential level of consensus might be. So unless there are more things to be discussed, and I'm looking, Stefan, you have your hand raised?
Yes, it's Stefan Hankins, a CrossFit person. Yes, I just had a request. I was wondering whether, I think there was a mention made that there were messages being circulated regarding this project of the so-called claims notice. This is, would it be possible to circulate the references of those documents which are circulated within ICANN circles?
This is Barry. I'll I'll send a link out to the RPM documents, and I'll denote the page number where the draft claims notice letters are located for the working group to review.
Thanks very, very much.
Okay. Thank you. And I guess with this, we can close this meeting relatively early today, and we will have an awful lot to discuss during next meeting. So thank you for your patience with me being on and off the call during my taxi ride, and I'm looking forward to discussing it with you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Thomas and Barry.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.